It's time to tune up your taste buds and take a trip to culinary heaven, because we're live from Jasper's Kitchen, presented by Hen House. Sit back, relax, and enjoy something new from the wonderful world of delicious cooking with our favorite chef, Jasper Marabli, and his co-host, food journalist, Kimberly Stearns.
Jasper, 'twas the night before Christmas and all through the house.
Uh-oh.
Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Merry Christmas, Jasper.
Thank you, Kimberly. Merry Christmas to you. This is a great show you have today for Christmas weekend.
We have a delicious show. We're so lucky to catch up with Chef Bill Yassas, who is the former White House chef. He's written a book called The Sweet Spot, and we're going to talk to him.
Oh, wow.
And learn some maybe behind-the-scenes secrets. Chef Brandon Brumback, who has Kansas City ties. His dad has worked for Hen House forever. He is a very celebrated chef. He's at the Albert in Chicago.
Fantastic.
He's worked for Thomas Keller, Danny Meyer, you name it.
Wow.
We're going to talk to him. We are going to be talking to Four Roses Bourbon. We're going to talk to Chubby Bubby Chocolates here in Kansas City, yeah.
Another delicious show right here on KCMO. And Miss Kimberly,
yes,
from Jasper's Restaurant, from live from Jasper's Kitchen, and everybody who's involved with the show, I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year.
Live from Jasper's Kitchen is brought to you by Hen House Market. It's Christmas weekend, and it's time to finish your holiday shopping at your neighborhood Hen House Market. Standing rib roast, certified Hereford beef, only $9.99 a pound. Spiral spiced ham for your table? That's right, Smithfield ham is $1.99 a pound. Save an additional dollar with a coupon on the front page. And don't forget, snow crab clusters. 8 and up. That's 8 to a pound. Only $8.99. That's an extremely hot price. And you can get my recipe online at henhouse.com to make the finest snow crab clusters you'll ever taste. Jumbo sweet red cherries. Only $4.99 a pound. This is almost exclusive to Hen House Market. The hottest price in town. Along with fresh Atlantic salmon. Only $7.99 a pound. It's Hen House Market for the holidays. And Merry Christmas from David Ball and all of the Ball family. Kimberly, you know, when I get a cookbook, and I think you and I are on the same page.
Yes.
We always go to the back of the cookbook.
Always. We always go to desserts.
We go to desserts.
Absolutely.
You have brought me a cookbook where I don't have to do that.
That's right. We can just read the whole gosh darn book.
I start from the beginning.
Front to back. And it's not just any dessert cookbook author. We actually have a former White House executive pastry chef, Chef Bill Yassas, who was at the White House during George W. Bush and Laura Bush's term.
And First Lady Obama, Michelle Obama's.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
We are so lucky to have you on the show with us this morning. Good morning, Chef.
Good morning. I feel lucky to be here. Glad to be talking with you.
Well, you're talking to two sweet addiction. How would I say it, Kimberly?
Sweet addicts.
Sweet addicts, not sweet addiction people.
Okay. My kind of people.
Yeah. So when we got the book immediately, you know, we're like, wow, this is something. And of course, to have you on the show, Chef, but let's just kick this off right from the beginning, Kimberly.
Well, the book is called The Sweet Spot. And what it is, it's an inspiring collection of delectable sweets that reveal the magic that happens when you use sugar as a flavor enhancer, like you would with salt, rather than as the basis for a dessert. Brilliant, Chef.
Well, and I should specify that I by no means mean the quantities are the same. So when we say use sugar like salt, what I mean is just use enough to bring out the flavor, but not to bury the other flavors in sweetness.
So what or who inspired you to start baking with less sugar?
Well, I mean, mostly it was my customers when I was cooking in restaurants, and they would often say, you know, I tried your recipe, but I didn't put as much sugar in, and it was still good. And I heard that about not only my own recipes, but other recipes, and it began to occur to me in noticing how much sugar we have in the rest of our diet that I thought people were maybe getting sort of, you know, burnt out on sugar before they ever got to dessert. So I started sort of experimenting with this a while ago, but then when I worked for the President and Mrs. Obama, we really tried to make the desserts healthier, and what we found was that they also were tastier.
Isn't that and people find that surprising?
Well, I think we're sort of used to building up, you know, amounts of sugar in our desserts, and chefs when they sort of want to be sure the dessert goes over well, maybe add a few tablespoons of sugar. But also, something else that's important to note here is that sugar not only gives flavor, but it creates texture and structure in a dessert. So there's many times when your dessert will hold together better, your cake will hold together better, the more sugar you put in. So you can't just remove the sugar. You have to sort of calibrate it so that the dessert still holds together, is delicious, and it still registers as sweet on the palate.
Chef Yasis, you were actually deemed the crust master in chief by a certain pie-loving president. And I'm going right to it right now. Unlike some people who can't say who your favorite children are, you know, boy, girl, son, daughter, whatever, what is your favorite recipe in the cookbook?
Well, as you say, I mean, the pies are a big part of the book. We certainly go into great detail with the pie section. That's one of my favorites. But I also like chocolate, so there's a number of chocolate recipes here which really bring out the flavors of chocolate which are not maybe always recognized. There's lemony accents to chocolate, there's raspberry, cherry-type accents in most chocolates, and I try to bring those out in the chocolate recipe. I suppose one of my favorites is the one that we call Sheba from Queens, because my bakery, theperfectpie.com, is in Queens, New York. And so instead of Queen of Sheba, we called it Sheba from Queens. Instead of using butter in that recipe, and this is kind of a shocker, we use avocado because we know avocado oil is a healthy oil. And the thing is that the avocado, you don't notice it at all in the cake. You just notice that it's creamy, it's moist, and it holds together very well.
Well, that gets me on something else. When you look at the recipes, you use some interesting ingredients, gin, crust, ginger, peachy pie. I mean, so there's some ingredients you throw in there. Some of them, you're not hiding the gin, but there's gin in the crust.
Well, we use the gin in the crust because when you use alcohol instead of water, if you're making dessert for grown-ups now, the alcohol prevents the gluten from forming, and the gluten is what makes pie crust leathery or tough. So it's an interesting addition. The alcohol it makes it for a flakier crust, in fact.
Very interesting. And Jasper and I are huge pie fans, so we're kind of fixated on this chapter, but we need to get back to the interview, Jasper.
I know. I'm sorry. Pies.
Chef Yasis, how has your baking style maybe evolved over the years? I'm sure it has, if you're like any, you know, professional chef.
Yeah, it has. I'll say the biggest arc has been I started out training in France, and I learned all French desserts, and that was great. There's all kinds of great techniques and good, you know, the classic baking like cream puffs and eclairs and cakes, sponge cakes even. But I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Ohio with homey desserts that were delicious and simple. And so I sort of have gravitated back to that. That's what's most satisfying to me. I love looking at French bakeries and French pastry shops, and I do love eating those desserts. But for real pleasure at the table, I like the basic American desserts, the layer cakes, the cobblers, the kind of puddings that we have in this book. So I would say I kind of came back to my origins as a change.
I can only imagine what it was like working at the White House, and now you've moved on. What projects are you working on since leaving the White House in 2014?
Well, I have a bakery here in New York City. It's called PerfectPie.com. It's actually an internet business, so we send pies all over the country. You can order a pie, and we send it to you the next day, overnight. And that has taken up most of my time. I also have kept up with kind of a civic engagement, I would call it. We do classes for children in which we try to teach them healthier approach to food, and we also use those recipes to teach science. So the program is called Kitchen Garden Laboratory, and that's something that is really close to my heart.
So in parting, we could talk to you all day, and I'm sure the stories you have for us. But unfortunately, this is radio, so we've got to wrap it up. What's one recommendation, Chef Yasis, that you have for home bakers who are trying to start baking with less sugar?
Well, first of all, nobody wants to have to explain a dessert. It has to be delicious. So my point here is that if you're not sure about the amount of sugar, stick to the recipe, but serve a smaller portion. And, of course, what we're talking about here is moderation. Maybe have desserts less often. But when you do make a dessert, you want to be sure that they're really delicious and satisfying. And just portion size and frequency, I think, are the way to go.
And I think...
Or you can buy my book.
That's right. And your book is called The Sweet Spot, and it's available, of course, wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Jasper Rainy Day Books here in Fairway.
I'm thinking right now, Kimberly, some local pastry chefs, friends of ours, J.C. Gregg, et cetera, this will be on my Christmas list.
Absolutely.
For them, because there's some very creative recipes in there.
And do I have permission? Do I have permission to ask him one more question?
Please take it away, lady.
Do you have one favorite dessert that you served during either administration, maybe in the private family residence or at a state dinner? Is there one that you can sort of say, yeah, that was really my favorite?
Yeah, there is. So there are two different things, because in the residence, people, like, you know, just like us, they want something simple and. And lovable, like a red velvet cake or simple pie. But for the state dinner, my favorite was a coconut cake. My all-time favorite with coconut cake with 7-minute frosting and a lemon filling. That, I think that's, not everyone loves coconut, but the people who love it really love it.
I absolutely love it. It's one of the most popular desserts at our restaurant. So, well, we appreciate you coming on. What an honor to talk to the former White House pastry chef, Bill Yasis, and of course, your new pie shop in New York City, which is online and people can order from you and get a pie overnight. The website is
perfectpie.com.
Thanks so much for coming on today, Kimberly. I don't know
Thanks
about you, but
me.
I need a piece of pie now.
I do too. Thanks, Chef.
Thank you.
Live from Jasper's Kitchen is brought to you by Hen House Market. It's Christmas weekend, and it's time to finish your holiday shopping at your neighborhood Hen House Market. Standing rib roast, certified Hereford beef, only $9.99 a pound. Spiral spiced ham for your table? That's right, Smithfield ham is $1.99 a pound. Save an additional dollar with a coupon on the front page. And Merry Christmas from David Ball and all of the Ball family. Kimberly, it's always great to get someone on that we know who has really made a successful trip, let's say, from Kansas City around the country.
That's right.
And now is in Chicago at a very famous restaurant. But what a journey this gentleman has had.
You know, Chef Brandon Brumback, who I think was born at Shawnee Mission Medical Center. His dad works for Hen House. And Brandon went through Bob Broussard's program at Broadmoor Bistro.
Exactly.
Which is so cool. He is now in Chicago, but his journey is fascinating. He is only 29 years old, Jasper.
Wow, this is something else.
And he has worked for some of the biggest names in this country. But you know what? We've got Brandon on the line. We'll let him tell his story. Brandon.
Yes, how are you?
Well, welcome to the show, my friend. And again, I said, what a journey you have had. How did you begin working in the kitchens? Where did this all start, in Kansas City or in culinary school?
Yes, it actually happened, like Kimberly said, with Bob Broussard at Broadmoor Technical Center. I started working at Hen House when I was like 14 years old, before the labor laws changed. And, you know, my dad was pretty much, he told me I had an expensive habit of sneaker collecting, and that I needed to get my own source of income. So I was a sacker at Hen House on Johnson Drive in Merriam for about 2 years before I started cooking. And then I enrolled in the Broadmoor Technical Center program as a sophomore in high school. And, you know, it was kind of, you know, I guess not love at first sight, but just seemed like the perfect fit for me. So
when did that spark happen, Brandon? I mean, you and I have talked before, and you kind of know exactly when you decided, yep, this is what I'm going to do.
Well, I guess I was never really that amazing of a student, you know, always more of like a B, C average. And, you know, I didn't really know what I was going to do, you know, as far as college or anything of that sort. And, you know, I honestly enrolled in the Broadmoor program because there was an older student that I had grown up with, Justin Hoffman, who is now actually one of the instructors there. And he had taken it and just fell in love with it and had nothing but great things to say about it. You know, he thought it could be an avenue that would work out. So I guess when I was in Bob's class, maybe week one or two, you know, he began to talk about standards, and it just kind of clicked for me that, you know, this could, you know, being on your feet, being active, you know, being able to create artwork on a daily basis was, you know, that's when it kind of clicked for me.
So, Brandon, let's talk about your mentors. I know you said Bob Rossard already in Kansas City, but you must have many so far.
I do. I have many. So, you know, when I was in Bob's program in high school, I ended up getting a job at, or should I say, I was lucky enough to get a job at the American Restaurant, which, you know, most people in Kansas City know was kind of the culinary, you know, mecca for years.
No doubt.
So I started when I was 17 years old there, working for Selena Teo. You know, Chef Teo was definitely my first you know, restaurant mentor. You know, she showed me, you know, how to break down fish and how to butcher meat and, you know, how to cook meat to temp, and you know, she was definitely that, you know, laying the foundation for me. And you know, at such a young age, I was very privileged to be able to work under her. And you know, she was definitely the first one to, I guess, show me what real restaurants were like, what real restaurant work and hospitality in the real world was. I would definitely say that she was up there. I went to Johnson & Wales University in Denver after I graduated high school. You know, I had many, many chefs out there that I worked under, but I guess my first mentor that I really learned under was Selena.
So, Brandon, okay, we've name dropped in Kansas City with Selena Teo. Let's go outside Kansas City. Maybe Yountville, California. Who'd you work for there?
Oh, wow.
So I was privileged enough to work for, you know, some amazing chefs out there, you know, at the French Laundry and Bouchon. So those are both, you know, Chef Thomas Keller restaurants, which is, you know, in my opinion, you know, the greatest chef that America's ever seen. So I was privileged enough to work for Chef Corey Lee at the French Laundry, which was his chef de cuisine at the time. And then, you know, Chef Phil Tessier at Bouchon. So those are, you know, two juggernauts of the, or should I say three juggernauts of the culinary industry in America and the world. So, you know, I was out there when I was, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old. So it was just a you know, great first, I don't know, I guess great first job, you know, out of college.
What was it like working for Thomas Keller? Did you just do a stage or do you actually work at the restaurants?
Both. So I did my internship for culinary school at the French Laundry, and was lucky enough to be brought on to, you know, to the restaurant group. And, you know, I was moved between French Laundry and Bouchon. So it was an amazing experience. You know, I learned most of my foundational, or not even foundational, but most of my techniques and, you know, skill set as far as, you know, just cookery in general, but, you know, cleanliness standards, you know, having integrity for ingredients and, you know, working with the best possible ingredients you can find. And, you know, I learned so much out there that I still use and hold true, you know, to this day. So it was probably the most experience of my life.
And, you know, in radio, 9 minutes goes really fast, so we're going to have to fast forward your journey because connecting the dots to Chicago, you worked for some juggernauts in Chicago as well before you landed at your current executive chef position.
Yeah, I guess I can kind of roll through really quickly with those. You know, when I first moved to the city, you know, I came out to Chicago kind of chasing a girl, which, you know, was never a good idea. you know, I started working with, you know, Chef Paul Kahn at Blackbird. And at the time, you know, his chef de cuisine was Mike Sheeran, which, you know, two amazing chefs, too, that I still, you know, keep in contact with this day.
All right. I have to ask you before we go anywhere, what is your favorite cuisine to cook? And I know I'm putting you on the spot here.
That's all right. Honestly, my favorite cuisine to cook is French. It's the foundation of everything that I've done, and I feel like it's the, you know, the stepping stone to a lot of different cuisines.
And you're right now at the Albert Chicago in this gorgeous new hotel, having a great time. We both follow you on Instagram and just swoon worthy dishes that you put up there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Kimberly's big word right now is swoon. I like that, Miss Kimberly.
Well, Brandon is swoonable. And, you know, when he comes back to Kansas City for a couple of days, we may be able to to do something with him, you know?
Well, my friends, you're going to be hearing more about Brandon. You could probably read about him in the Kansas City Star very soon, Miss Kimberly.
That's right.
This is Jasper Mirabile.
And Kimberly Stern.
Talking to another rock star right from Kansas City, now in Chicago, right here on KCMO.
Talk Radio 103.7 FM, AM 710.
Live from Jasper's Kitchen is brought to you by Hen House Market. It's Christmas weekend, and it's time to finish your holiday shopping at your neighborhood Hen House Market. Standing rib roast, certified Hereford beef, only $9.99 a pound. Spiral spiced ham for your table? That's right, Smithfield ham is $1.99 a pound. Save an additional dollar with a coupon on the front page, along with fresh Atlantic salmon, only $7.99 a pound. It's Hen House Market for the holidays. And Merry Christmas from David Ball and all of the Ball family.
Jill, you know, we're pretty lucky to interview this next guest.
Oh, absolutely.
Four Roses Bourbon is one of the most revered bourbons in the country. You've probably imbibed a time or two.
Oh, for sure.
And Al Young, who is the senior brand ambassador and historian. He's got a cool job.
This is a very cool job. I want something like that. Brand ambassador sounds important.
And so we're going to discuss the history of Four Roses Bourbon. And he's going to share some moments in history that put the bourbon on the map. So let's get on with it. Al Young, good morning.
Well, good morning to you.
Thanks, both of you. Thanks for joining us. Where are you? Where are we calling you? Where are you located?
Well, my office is in the distillery in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, which is just south of Frankfort on the map.
Beautiful area.
See, this is the perfect job, isn't it?
Well, let's start out. Tell us a little bit about the background of Four Roses Bourbon.
Well, you know, the way Four Roses got its name is always exciting. That was the fact that Paul Jones Jr., our founder, fell in love with a Southern Belle and sent her a proposal. And she said, if I accept, I'll wear a corsage of four red roses, funny enough, to the upcoming ball. And so when he showed up that night, sure enough, there she was in her black dress with a corsage of four red roses. So we think that he transferred the love that he had for the beautiful Belle to his whiskey making and came out with the brand Four Roses in 1888, and it's been around ever since.
Wow. Al, you know, bourbon has become just such a big, big thing in the markets these days. Everybody wants to be drinking it. Why do you think there's so much interest in the, you know, the new generation here to have bourbon?
Well, you know, I think probably one, some of the factors that influence that choice is the fact that that we've gotten a group of people that are in the consumers area that are more educated, a little bit more in the know of American-made products. And, of course, bourbon can be made anywhere in the United States. We're just lucky enough to have our distillery here in Kentucky, where 95% of the best bourbon in the world is made.
Well, of course.
And they're finding out how flexible it can be and how you can suit your needs with either barrel strength or 100 proof, 90 proof, 80 proof, and a variety of tastes and flavors to suit just about everybody.
And, you know, too, we're in a cocktail trend. I'm not sure that trend is really ever going to go away, but cocktails are so hot. And how have they changed over the past 50 years? I mean, you've seen lots of changes. What are some of those you can share with us?
Well, you know, there used to be a lot of mystery about cocktails back in the 40s, especially. and the mystery had to do with something called the Violet Hour, which was that time between when you left work and when you got on the train, or the time that you left work and you went by the local bar on your way home, and you had a cocktail or you had a beverage before you went home to have dinner with the family. And at that time, they were probably limited to just a couple of things, maybe a Manhattan or an Old Fashioned or some strange exotic thing that the local bartender made up. And today, with the mixology being all the craze, we're finding more ingredients from different sectors being used. I mean, it used to be vermouth, and it used to be fruits or such as lemons and limes And all that stuff is branched out now to the point where you're getting people that are making their own bitters, for example, in their bars, and adding their certainly special touch to making a signature cocktail for their events. For example, we come out with something every year we call the Rosarita, which is just a simple combination of two parts margarita mix and one part Four Roses 80 proof, that when you put it over crushed ice and add a drizzle of grenadine, you've made a great, great drink for either summer or any time in the year.
So if you were back in the 40s and you were a businessman taking the train home, stopping off at your local watering hole to have a cocktail before you went home for dinner, what would have been your choice?
Well, it probably would have been a Manhattan, and it would have been made with a blended version of Four Roses that was available from the 40s all the way up to the 90s. You know, it was crazy the way they did it. The Four Roses brand was sold as a blended whiskey in the United States, while they sold it as a straight bourbon overseas in Europe and Japan. That's when we were owned by the Seagram Corporation, and now we're owned by the Kirin Brewery from Japan, and they believe only straight bourbon is the way to go.
So let's fast forward to today, when you stop off at your favorite watering hole before you go home to dinner. What's your cocktail of choice?
Well, I still, you know, I'm still a purist. I like a Manhattan, and I like
Me
it made
too.
With Four Roses 90 proof, which, you know, has a balance of fruit and spice in it because of our new unique way of using our various recipes and yeast components of Four Roses bourbon. So it's got fruit and spice that adds to that vermouth, no matter what it is. And I like it the way the bartender makes it. You know, I found out that if you go into a bar, I don't care if it's in Kansas or whether it's in Kentucky or New York or San Francisco, if you turn the bartender on by asking their opinion on how they like to make something, it comes out tasting really good and really unique.
I think that's very true. Now, I grew up, my grandparents loved Manhattans, and it didn't have to be even the violet hour or the twilight hour to get there, you know, as long as it was 5 o'clock somewhere. What about Manhattans in, you know, in Japan? Do we see much of that, or is Manhattan an American cocktail?
Well, a Manhattan is primarily an American cocktail, but in Japan, you're going to see a variety of almost everything. And they're creative there as well. While they do like, some do like their whiskey straight, just to get that full flavor of the different bourbons that are on the market today.
Well, you know, Four Roses, of course, is celebrating their 50th anniversary, and I'm holding this beautiful book with an emblem on the front stamped with Al Young, and that would be you. Tell us some of the more interesting things you're seeing as you visit the country during this celebratory year.
Well, you know, I'm seeing an age range of drinkers that's getting significantly lower. By that, I mean they're all legal, but it's in that 25 to 35 set. They are more knowledgeable because we've done a better job of educating them. So, you know, they're more apt to ask questions and require information that only we who are in the industry used to ask each other, probably on a Friday afternoon after a good drink.
Well, Al, we can people buy this book, the Four Roses 50th Anniversary book?
Yes, there are some that are out there on the Internet. We sell it in our bookstores at the distillery and in our gift shops at the distillery and our warehousing unit, which is separated from us for about 45 miles in Kentucky. We're in Lawrenceburg. The aging warehouses are in Cox Creek, Kentucky. So you can go at it that way or get it online with us with Four Roses website if you want.
Well, it's a very, very interesting subject. You are full of stories. I'm sure we could spend the whole hour with you. Unfortunately, we can't. So,
thank you for saying you're full of stories and not full of something else.
This is a G-rated show, Al. Sorry.
He's full of bourbon.
You are. You're full of Four Roses bourbon. Well, have fun during this 50th year, and congratulations on a beautiful book.
Thank you.
The type of history book I'd like to write. And
absolutely.
We'll talk to you again about cocktail trends.
Live from Jasper's Kitchen is brought to you by Hen House Market. It's Christmas weekend, and it's time to finish your holiday shopping at your neighborhood Hen House Market. Standing rib roast, certified Hereford beef, only $9.99 a pound. Spiral spiced ham for your table? That's right, Smithfield ham is $1.99 a pound. Save an additional dollar with a coupon on the front page. And don't forget, snow crab clusters. 8 and up, that's 8 to a pound, only $8.99. That's an extremely hot price, and you can get my recipe online at henhouse.com to make the finest snow crab clusters you'll ever taste. It's Hen House Market for the holidays, and Merry Christmas from David Ball and all of the Ball family.
Chocolate universe, dreaming of a candy paradise.
Kimberly, did you know chocolate comes from cocoa?
I did know that.
Cocoa beans grow on trees.
Okay.
Trees are plants, right?
Right.
So chocolate counts as salad. You like that?
I like the way you think, Jasper.
Well, actually, I had a little help on that from our producer and engineer, Mark Andrews, because we are talking chocolates.
We are. We're so excited. We've got Carolee Hoffman, who is the founder and guide of Chubby Bubba Chocolates and Me. Can I say that name again? Chubby Bubby Chocolates. I like that.
Chubby Bubby. I like
Chubby
that
Bubba.
Name.
Chubby Bubba. Carolee, good morning. We are so thrilled that you could come in and talk to us.
Hello.
And we want to know, what is Chubby Bubba Chocolates and Me?
Well, we host in-home artisan chocolate-making parties for small groups of friends. If you love chocolate and you're looking for something different to do, something fun to do with your friends, this is a great experience. And in fact, I consider the Me to stand for my experience, as in I made these chocolates with the help of Chubby Bubba.
I love that.
They are unbelievable. So you're saying that girlfriends, bridesmaids, date night couples, co-workers, team building, you can all get together and make chocolate that look just like what you brought into me today, guaranteed?
Very much so.
And can I change that pronoun, Jasper? She brought them into all of us here. Okay.
Hey, come on. It's all about me, Miss Kimberly.
We're all eating these chocolates. Now, I already ate the peanut butter and jelly.
That's correct.
Which was divine.
Yes.
I ate the whiskey with the
Jack Daniels.
With the Jack Daniels on top. And I'm about to crunch into the strawberry lime, which is red hot.
I got a little chocolate rush. Mm. I savored the peanut butter very slowly.
Ooh.
The Jack Daniels I took and I said, a little taste of whiskey. I like that subtle taste. But then the strawberry lime. Oh, and you said maybe a little too much lime. No way, lady.
No.
Those were actually delicious. Well,
On point. Let's
just back this all up and talk about how it all began. I mean, we're not just talking about like Willy Wonka chocolate factory at home and just, you know, melting some Nestle chocolate or something. We're talking about artisan chocolates, my friend. These are beautiful. You can check them out on our Facebook page or on ChubbyBubbaChocolates.com.
That's correct. So the story of how we began, I actually think it's a fun story. Back in 2009, my husband, Scott, who's an engineer, he decided to make chocolates for me for Valentine's Day.
You're a chocolate lover.
I love chocolate.
Okay.
I love to bake. So he... who has always made something, decided chocolates. Well, they looked great, tasted terrible.
Oh, did they?
Oh, my gosh.
Did you tell him?
Oh, my gosh. It's become a fun story.
Yes.
And so, but it jump-started a new hobby because actually he designed his own mold and everything. But since then, it was like, oh, how else can we make these chocolates better? So we started tasting chocolates everywhere we went, and we started making chocolates. And in 2011... Scott actually graduated from a professional chocolatier program. And his favorite part of making chocolates is coming up with the new flavors. So you had three of them today. Mm-hmm. We have over 50 that
oh
we have
gosh.
Developed ourselves.
Okay.
And I've always been the other hand. And so sometimes in the kitchen making chocolates, sometimes I am just doing all the logistics. And so all of a sudden it was like, this is so much fun. All of our friends and family love this. how can we, and I love doing things with my friends, mm-hmm. and we're always mm-hmm. looking for something different to do.
Right.
So I started putting the two together. And that's where the idea for the chocolate parties came from. And so then when I was doing my research, I found out that no one else is doing these types of parties. If you look in the United Kingdom, there's a couple of chocolate businesses that host parties, but they're just decorating truffles. So all you're doing is just rolling the truffles and kind of putting them in, dipping them into something. In the United States, there's a couple of professional classes, but nothing in home.
So how much time do you invest? If I came to one of your classes, how much time?
Each party is about 2 to 2.5 hours.
Oh.
And that depends really kind of how much social. Because at the beginning, everybody's gathering and you just need some time to catch up and just get something to drink. And so, but
so you're saying wine and whiskey, may be involved in this also, this party?
It could be.
Now, my friends, again, I have to tell you, and while you're listening, we're not just talking just ordinary chocolates. These are truly classical artisan. How did you teach yourself?
We did.
You really did?
Mm-hmm.
That's something else. That's just really something.
So where did Chubby Bubba come from? Is that Scott?
Yes. He actually was called Bubba in some of the work things that he has done. So that was a nickname he had. And then he thought, oh, that Chubby Bubba just kind of has a ring to it.
It does.
And especially when you think, okay, neither of us are toothpick thin. So it just kind of came naturally.
I love it. It's very memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Very memorable. So so holidays are coming up. I know you're already well booked, but you do parties around the holidays, Valentine's Days, corporate team building, girlfriends, date nights, whatever, mm-hmm. right?
Actually, we can do parties year-round.
Year-round.
Holidays tend to be when people think about it, especially Christmas and Valentine's. Really, the fall, winter, spring is when you, just that taste of chocolate mm. is always something you want the most. But we can do parties year-round.
So do you walk away with a, what is that, 18 pieces?
There's 12 pieces,
12 pieces
in a box of chocolates.
And you walk away from the party with a 12-piece box of chocolates?
That's correct. Each person gets to make the chocolates from beginning to scratch. I guide them through the process, but they make them, and then they take them home at the end
wow.
to savor later.
Later?
And yeah, you get to taste chocolates during the party itself.
Later,
too.
Kimberly. Some people don't eat them all right away like these animals in this room.
Oh, the way home.
And we do have some parties. The typical party, you're making a dozen chocolates.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some parties where we will do 2 dozen chocolates. We also have some where, consider you're a bride and you're wanting to serve chocolates at your wedding. So maybe you gather together all your bridesmaids. And you have a fun social together. You're making the chocolates, but then you're also making chocolates for the wedding.
For the wedding. Mm-hmm. I love that.
No kidding.
Is there an age, a minimum age?
Well, there's no maximum.
No, there's no maximum. But is there a minimum
right
age?
Right now, I am targeting adults.
Okay.
So, yeah, as far as, you know, maybe teenagers at yeah. the most, but the younger you are, it's just too hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, people can go online to find out more about Chubby Bubba Chocolates by going to ChubbyBubbyChocolates.com. Of course, they can follow you on Facebook.
Yes.
What's on the horizon? I mean, just more flavors or?
Oh, my. You just never know.
I think there's something up her sleeve. She just doesn't want to tell us, Jasper. Mm,
Kimberly, have you heard anybody? Wait, did you guys? Well, I thought people, maybe our listeners maybe thought we were off the air for a second.
I know. That was
she
a
said,
long
oh
pause.
My.
No. Well, I could totally see you and Lisa at a date night.
This is Slow Food Kansas City. This
and
is going to be an event in January, February.
That's right.
Definitely. We'll have to come do this with you. This is Jasper Mirabile.
And Kimberly Stern.
Talking chocolates. Chubby Bubba Chocolates and me. Right here on KCMO.
Talk Radio 103.7 FM, AM 710.